Would you turn, please, in your Bibles to Genesis, the 37th chapter. Genesis chapter 37. And I'm sure that most of you, if not all of you, will immediately recognize this as the section of the book of Genesis that is about the life of the man named Joseph. And I have made this observation to you before, and that about one quarter of the book of Genesis is about Joseph. And when you stop and think about all that is contained in the book of Genesis, and all of the great stories that we have there, all of the very important information that we have in that book, the idea of one quarter of it being taken up to tell the story about this man's life ought to impress us that there's something really valuable here. There's something about this man and about his life that that the Lord really wants us to know and to learn from. And I suspect that probably Joseph is one of the most beloved characters of all of the Bible, certainly of the Old Testament characters that we're familiar with. And his life does indeed stand out as an example to us today. I mean, it's for that reason that we have references made to Joseph and to Joseph's life in the New Testament. And Christians were expected to be familiar with that man and familiar with his life and to derive some very valuable and useful lessons from his life. Well, I want to talk to you this evening for a few moments in just kind of a general summary fashion about the life of Joseph. And beginning in the 37th chapter of Genesis, beginning in the 15th verse, we're told that a man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, "What are you looking for?" And he said, "I'm looking for my brothers. Please tell me where they are pasturing the flock." Then the man said, "They have moved from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. When they saw him from a distance, and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. And they said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer." And that last phrase is what I really would want to kind of build our lesson off of this evening. That statement that they made when with utter contempt and absolute hatred for this, their brother, they said, "Here comes this dreamer." You know, it's interesting how many times in the Bible statements are made by some people that are meant to be accusatory. They're meant to be criticisms. And when you stop and you think about them and you consider them in the light of the full story of what the Bible has to say about a particular person, it's interesting how many times that critical statement turns out to be really a compliment. That which was meant to be an accusation actually turns out to be an accolade, an acclamation of a person's life. I think about Jesus. You remember what the enemies of Jesus said about him? "This man receives sinners. And aren't you glad of it?" They meant it as a criticism. They meant it as an observation that would drive people away from this man. But it's one of the outstanding features of our Savior, that he would have something to do with sinners. And for that reason, he would have something to do with you and with me. Well, Joseph's brothers made a statement like that. "Here comes this dreamer." If you're familiar with the life of Joseph, you know, going back into the beginning verses of this 37th chapter, we have a record of some dreams that Joseph had. I'd like for us to spend a few minutes talking about those dreams, but then also look at the rest of Joseph's life and see what part dreams played in the rest of his life as well. Not just dreams that he had, but dreams that others had, but nonetheless that were part and parcel of the life of this man. These dreams were quite important to the life and to the story of the life of Joseph. I heard about a young fellow who had a dream about this girl he'd been dating for a while. He dreamed that they got engaged, and he saw her the next day, and he told her, "Well, you know, I had a dream about you last night. I dreamed we got engaged. What do you think that means?" And she said, "Well, I think that means you've got more sense when you're asleep than when you're awake." Well, dreams certainly can, particularly as we look in the scriptures, dreams certainly do have quite consequential meanings often in the scriptures, because that was part of the way that God communicated to people. I don't want you to leave this place thinking that, okay, now I've had some strange dreams here lately, maybe that's God speaking to me. That's not the way God speaks to people any longer. The New Testament tells us that he has in these last days spoken to us by his Son. If you want to know what God would have to say to you, and he does have something to say to you, you need to find that out through his Son and through the apostles and the prophets that his Son spoke through. But that being said, let's think about these dreams that Joseph had. We come to what I'm going to call, first of all, his special dreams that are recorded in this opening, in these opening verses of chapter 7. It says in the beginning verses that Jacob, that's the father of Joseph, lived in the land where his fathers had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their fathers. Now, as we proceed into this early part in Joseph's life, I think we're going to see some things. First of all, about his family. And you know, we have to say about Joseph that they're just, not everything about his family was good. Not everything about his family was favorable. And that's just one of the things about families. We just don't exert any control over what family we're going to be born into. We don't have anything to say about whether or not we're going to be born in America or born in Europe. We don't have anything to say about whether or not we're going to be born black or whether we're going to be born white, whether we're handicapped at birth or whether we're healthy, whether we're rich and born into a family that's rich or born into a family that's poor. There are just a lot of things that we don't have anything to say about. Joseph didn't have anything to say about the family he was going to be born into. But as a result of being born into this family, as is true for all of us, there were certain consequences that followed, certain circumstances that issued from his family. And the same's going to be true for you and for me. There are certain issues that are going to grow out of the family that we are a part of. There'll be good points and there'll be bad points about that. You know, Joseph, I would say to you that Joseph was born into a family in which faith played a part. Now, sometimes the faith wasn't real strong, but it wasn't exemplified as well as it possibly could have been. Nonetheless, he was born into a family where there was faith, and the same may be true of you. Maybe there were some shortcomings within the faith of your parents or in the faith of your brothers and sisters, or maybe there's been shortcomings in the faith of your children. But they're your family. And you just have to deal with those circumstances. I think we could say of Joseph's life in his family that favoritism played a part. And if you're familiar with this story, you know how that Joseph is identified as Jacob, or Israel as he's also known. He was the favorite son of his father, and he had some favoritism shown towards him, and it resulted in some difficult circumstances. It's part of the reason, maybe even the chief reason, that his brothers hated him so and did to him what they did. But not only do we see in this early period in Joseph's life some facts about his family, we also see some things revealed about his future. Verses 5 through 8, we see where it's revealed that Joseph had a dream. When he told his brothers, they hated him even more. And you'll remember that this dream that he dreamed, Joseph saw he and his brothers out in the field working, and they were gathering in the sheaves. I remember singing that song, bringing in the sheaves. I didn't have the foggiest idea what a sheaf was. What are sheaves? Well, I didn't know it, but I did know. I had seen sheaves. It's just a bundle of grain. You see pictures, or maybe even you've seen it firsthand out in the field. It's been harvested, and grain has been gathered up. It's been gathered up into bundles and tied up and maybe standing there in the fields, and they're just sheaves all throughout the field. Well, that's what Joseph saw. And the sheaves that he gathered, and then the sheaves that his brothers gathered, and the sheaves that his brothers gathered bowed down to the sheaves that he gathered. And of course, they were incensed. This is why they hated him, because he was telling them, I've had this dream, this special dream, that indicated a superiority that I'm going to have over you. And it's going to be reflected in the kind of respect that you're going to show to me. I don't have nearly as many brothers as Joseph had. I've just got one. You met him here not too long ago. I can only imagine what Jack's response would have been if I came in and told him one day, you know, I had this dream, and in this dream, I become your boss. You're gonna do what I tell you to do. Well, these boys had kind of the same kind of reaction as you might expect from your own brothers and sisters. He had another dream a little later on. And in this dream, he saw the stars and the sun and the moon bowing down to him. And so he tells about this dream as well in verse 9 and following. He says in verse 9, lo, I've had still another dream, and behold, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me. Now, that's kind of interesting. Here's the sun, here's the moon, and here's 11 stars. And just coincidentally, he's got 11 brothers. But in addition to the brothers, the sun and the moon are there. He related it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you've had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground? And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in his mind. Apparently, even though his father rebuked him for this, nonetheless, he kind of put this away in the back of his mind as something to be thought upon and for future days. His brothers just hated him all the more for these special dreams. So we see his family in this time of his early life, 17 years old. We see his future being spoken of in these dreams that he had. And then we also see his fate referred to. His fate being that of one who is going to be in a position of superiority. Well, how is all of this going to come about? Well, of course, these brothers couldn't see how all of this would come about. This couldn't possibly be so. No one in their right mind would think that we're going to serve this little kid brother of ours. Well, they didn't know how it would come about. Joseph's father didn't know how it would come about. He rebuked him for telling about this dream that he had had. I suspect Joseph didn't know how it was going to come about. He only knew he had had these dreams. But nonetheless, he seems to be quite confident. This is of God. And as a result, then, it's going to come to pass. It's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen because it is of God. Well, those were the special dreams that Joseph had. But as we see his life carrying on and things that grow out of this early period of his life, we begin to see these special dreams shattered, as some might evaluate the situation. You recall the story, and we're not going to take up the time to read all through it and talk about it in detail, but you recall how these brothers take Joseph and they sell him to slave traders who are on their way down into Egypt. And off he's carried into Egypt, and there he's sold into slavery. He passes through this strange land. What do you think might have been going through Joseph's mind at this time? I don't know. I just wonder if he didn't reflect upon those dreams, those dreams of superiority, those dreams of his being special in some way. And as he passes through these strange lands and he goes to into his future as a slave, I wonder if there wasn't a temptation, at least, for those dreams that he had to begin to shatter and to just kind of fall away, seemingly so. I wonder if I'm speaking to any tonight who've had dreams, not in the same sense, but anticipations, expectations, things that they desire to do in life that just didn't work out for whatever reasons. And those dreams that you had about your life were shattered. How do you deal with that? If Joseph had these wonderings about how things were going to turn out as he's been being carried down into Egypt, how does he deal with that? Well, the text that records the life of this man, Joseph, goes on to make four times a very interesting statement that I'm just kind of inclined to think that Joseph knew all along and was confident in. And though his dreams might have been shaken at some points, nonetheless, I suspect he never gave them up, because he was convinced of the fact that is stated four times in the 38th chapter, in verse 2. I'm sorry, not in the 38th chapter, but in the 39th chapter, in verse 2. And the Lord was with Joseph. And then you look again at verse 3. The Lord was with him. And you drop down to the latter part of the chapter, verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph. And then again in verse 23, the Lord was with him. I just suspect about this young man that he had a confidence that this is the case. I don't know what's happening. I don't know why it's happening. I don't know how things are going to turn out regarding the things that God has said to me in these special dreams that I've had. But they're not going to be shattered. They're going to be completed because the Lord is with me. I find it interesting in Stephen's defense of himself in Acts the 7th chapter, when he gave this great overview of Hebrew history. He talked about Joseph, and you know what he had to say about Joseph? Yet God was with him. In Acts chapter 7 and in verse 9. What would be the summary of your life? What would be the summary of my life? Joseph's was summed up in that phrase that the Lord was with him. Are you equally confident that your life can be summed up in the same way? That the Lord is with you? You know, people's lives get described in the scriptures in some very revealing ways. You remember Judas Iscariot? How many times in the scriptures is he simply identified as the traitor? And his life is summed up in that simple statement. He's the traitor. I think of another Bible character that you're probably familiar with, Barnabas, whose very name is really a nickname, Barnabas. His real name is Joseph, coincidentally. But the apostles gave him a nickname. They called him Barnabas, which simply meant son of exhortation. He was an encourager. That's how his life could be summed up. Now watch how the Lord puts things back together. If these dreams of Joseph, in the estimation of some, would be shattered, look how the Lord puts it all back together. He does so by overcoming complications. Chapter 39 and verse 1 begins to tell of how Joseph's brought into Egypt. He's sold into slavery to the man by the name of Potiphar who takes him home and I think to put him into service. And I think we can rightly see the providence of God at work in all of this. But can we also not see Joseph's own, also see Joseph's resolve not to give up? Can we not also appreciate the fact that Joseph was determined through it all, that he was not going to do what a lot of people do when they begin to face complications in their lives and their dreams seem to be slipping away and what they want seems to be they just out of their grasp. And so they begin to complain. And they begin to accuse. They accuse God. And they become bitter about life. There's no indication of any of that. No evidence of any of that in this man, Joseph, in these complicated days in his life. We cannot always control the circumstances that we have to deal with in life. But we can decide that we're going to become better through those complicating factors of life and not bitter because of them. Chapter 39, verse 3 and 4 says, his master, that is Potiphar, saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight because of his person. And became his personal servant, became Potiphar's personal servant. And he made him overseer over his house. And all that he owned, he put in his charge. As I say, I certainly believe we can see the hand of God in this, but I think we can also see the hand of Joseph in this. As he shows us how to overcome complications. He also shows us in this time how to overcome temptations. Chapter 39, verses 7 through 9 tells that familiar story about Potiphar's wife. Verse 9, after deflecting her advances and turning down her offers, he says in verse 9, "There is no one greater in this house than I." And he, that is Potiphar, your husband, he has withheld nothing from me except you because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against you? How could I do this great evil and sin against Potiphar? How then could I do this great evil and sin against me? Now there's a manner in which all of that would be true. It'd be sinning against her. It'd be sinning against Potiphar. It'd be sinning against Joseph himself. But no, that's not what he said. He says, how can I do this great evil and sin against God? I want to tell you what will help us to get through the complicated times when maybe our dreams begin seem to be slipping away, and we're trying to deal the best way that we can with the circumstances that are at hand. How do we avoid becoming bitter? How do we strive to become better like Joseph did? How do we avoid the temptations that often come along with those troublesome times like they came for Joseph? Well, one way to do it is to remember what sin is. It is an affront to a holy God that we ostensibly serve. Now, if we're truly serving Him, if we're truly living for Him, then we'll do like Joseph. And we'll say, no, I can't do this. Don't you know he might have thought along the lines of, well, if I did this, I could gain favor. I could gain favor. I've already got favor from Potiphar. I'm in a privileged place. I could gain favor with his wife now, and maybe that would improve my situation. Can you not see how you might begin to think, well, this is how my cause can be advanced, and maybe this is the way I'm going to get to the fulfillment of those dreams I had some time ago. But he didn't do any of that because he understood that to do what she wanted to do would have been to sin against God, and he understood that there was no way to get to the privileges that he had dreamed about by sinning against God. And there is nothing in this life that is worth sinning against God. Not only did he face complications and temptations, he also, of course, had to face incarceration. You know the story of how the wife, after being rebuffed by Joseph, falsely accused him of having raped her. And so Potiphar has him thrown into jail. And in jail, don't you think that maybe there had been some thoughts along the lines of, well, maybe this is the time to give up all this God stuff. Maybe it's time just to accept that those dreams that I had back there some time ago just aren't going to come to pass. They're just dreams. Nothing indicative of God's plans and purposes for me. Well, when you come over into chapter 40, you find, of course, the story of how Joseph overcame this complication of incarceration. You know, sometimes the will of God is enjoyed. Sometimes the will of God is endured. And that seems to be the case with Joseph. And it may be the case in your life or my life as well. There may just be, in order to do and accomplish and complete the will of God, times when we just have to endure some things that aren't necessarily pleasant, that we would have never dreamed to be part of our lives. Joseph is cast into prison. He's 30 years old when he comes out. We don't know how old he was when he went in. I guess I've always just kind of had it in my mind that it must have been some period of years that he was in prison. But you know what happens to him while he's in there? You know the story of how the jailer notices how things just seem to go well for this young man. And he's eventually raised up to a position of responsibility even within the jail. And in the course of his time being held in this jail, there are two other prisoners who come in. One who had been the chief baker of the Pharaoh, and the other who had been the butler for Pharaoh. And lo and behold, these two men have dreams. And Joseph speaks to them about their dreams. Chapter 40 and verse 14 tells us that after he had interpreted their dreams and had told the butler that you're going to be released and restored to your position, everything's going to be good for you, But he told the baker, you're going to be put to death. And when all of those things begin to work out, just like Joseph said, in verse 40, he says to the butler, keep me in mind when it goes well with you. Please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. And when you drop down to verse 23, we're told, yet the chief cupbearer, or the butler, did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Does ingratitude ever bother you? You know, the scriptures are just filled with admonitions for us to be a people who are thankful, who are appreciative and expressive of our appreciation to one another, and most certainly to God for all that we have and for all of the ways that He has blessed us. It's a part of a holy life, this character trait of being grateful. But there's Joseph sitting in the, can you imagine how he thought, you know, a week's gone by, well, he just hadn't gotten around to it yet, and then a month's gone by, well, he's just trying to catch up with his work, and more time goes by. We don't know how much time. It's just, you know, the David's version of it. But finally it sinks into him that nobody's coming. There's no help coming. And it doesn't come until, guess what? Another dream. And this time it's Pharaoh who has the dream. And Pharaoh's dream, he sees cattle, and some of them are fat, some of them are lean, they're thin. He sees grain, and heads of grain growing out in the field. Some of it's fat, some of it's very thin, very sparse. And he wonders, what does this mean in chapter 41? And so he calls his wise men in verse 8. His wise men can't explain it. Isn't that the way it works out a lot of times? The experts in the final analysis really don't know. And that was the case here. And the butler hits himself on the forehead and says, I've got to confess something to you, Pharaoh. I've got to confess my own sins, my own fault here. I forgot to tell you about somebody I was supposed to tell you about. There's this fellow back in prison, this guy named Joseph, and he can interpret dreams. He interpreted my dream. And so Pharaoh sends for him. And in chapter 41, in verses 14 and following, Pharaoh sent, called for Joseph. They hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. When he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. When you talk about a politically incorrect answer, that was it. Pharaoh, there's a God. There's a God who is powerful enough, who can reveal dreams and the meaning of dreams. And so he reveals Pharaoh's dream. And through the process of all of this, Pharaoh finally takes Joseph. And it's interesting here. Can you see? He's getting himself in prison. He's getting himself dressed, cleaned up, shaved, everything, ready to go to appear before the Pharaoh. And before the day is over, he's the prime minister of Egypt. He's number two in all of the land. Shattered dream. Put back together, brought to fruition. Because you know the rest of the story, how his family experience a famine in their land, and they have to come down to Egypt to get food, and they are reconciled with their brother Joseph, And then his father is brought down. Well, at the end of the whole story is once again a matter of dreams, and what I will call sweet dreams. You come over to chapter 50 and the end of Joseph's life. In verses 22 and 23, Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years, and Joseph saw the third generation of Ephraim's sons. Also the sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knee. Joseph lived to see his grandchildren. What sweet dreams. Here's this man who had the great blessings that God told him back when he was 17 years old that he was going to bring to his life. And even beyond what God had talked to him about in his dreams. God made his life sweet. Joseph, verse 25, made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely take care of you. You shall carry my bones up from here. These were the among the last recorded words that Joseph spoke. And what was it about? What God is going to do for you. You take an oath, my brethren. You take an oath today that you're confident that God is going to take care of you, and that sweet dreams in the end will be what you too can enjoy. I don't know what kind of dreams, hopes, expectations, anticipations you may have about life. But I do know this. We've all got the sweet dream that God has promised to us. It will make anything we have to face and endure in this life worthwhile. Won't you give your life to God tonight if you haven't already done so? Come to Him through His Son, Jesus, confessing faith in Jesus as the Son of God. Turn from your sins. Be baptized. Wash the guilt of your sins away. And then let God do with your life what He would intend to do. I won't tell you it will be without trials and without temptations and without troubles, but I will tell you this, it will be good. And in the end, the dreams will be sweet. Won't you come to me while we stand here?